guys, welcome back to another episode of Textory. Today, I feel like we're gonna get a really chill episode, so if you feel like brewing some hot beverage right now just to like sit back and relax, I think it's a good time to do just that. But before we go there, remember that I do have a Patreon for this podcast because I need to survive somehow. And if you want this podcast to keep going, if you want new episodes to keep coming, the only way this podcast is funded is through Patreon. So head to patreon.com/textory to support me, and you also get some nice perks. I'm showing some pretty cool historical stuff on there. So back to the episode. Today we are moving around rural Illinois. That was a mouthful. In 1890s. This is a pretty fascinating sort of geographical setting for me because obviously I'm from Poland, and rural Poland at that time looked vastly different. I come from southern Poland, which during 19th century was under Austro-Hungarian occupation, and it was the poorest area of modern-day Poland. It was really bad. And, you know, towns and villages and just areas where poorer folks lived were devastatingly impoverished. People were walking bare feet, there was barely any food, children were dying like flies, hygiene was at an all-time low. It was pretty bad. So then I'm reading stuff about how those times looked in different countries, and I'm always so taken aback by the standards of living and the lifestyles of people because they sound a lot like what living in bigger Polish cities looked like at the time, and not living in villages. I mean, it's a completely different world. So the fact that people were able to just go into town to do some casual shopping is quite difficult for me to grasp because, you know, meanwhile in Poland, you had a town of about the same amount of people, and the only thing you were able to buy in that small town was probably like a pig. And you could go to like a market full of livestock, and that was it, and probably a bag of potatoes. So the fact that people were going around, going to church and to see their friends and practically living a very modern lifestyle in a way is just so vastly different to me. So this is why today's text is so fascinating. We're reading a teacher's diaries. So this is a Victorian era teacher. I mean, if we don't limit the term Victorian to just Great Britain, but 1890s Illinois, and we're talking about Emma Wormwood. I personally think this is a perfect name for a fictional character. The Adventures of Emma Wormwood, the Teacher. But this is basically it. This is her diaries. She lived in a couple of towns in Macoupin County, Illinois. I actually don't know. If you're from there, you probably know how to pronounce it. And actually, if you're from there, a lot of these places will sound really familiar. So this might be quite exciting. So she taught at Girard. All of these names are French, by the way, at the Hazel Green School. I think she lived there as well because she's mentioning that she walks to school. There is other towns that she mentions. There is Palmyra, Verdun. What I don't understand is how frequently she travels to those places because they're all about like 11, 12 miles away from each other or from a place where she was at the time. And about 7 miles per hour was the speed of a horse-drawn carriage. So that's over an hour ride to a different town, which, I mean, it might not sound like a lot, but again, it wasn't a car. It was a pretty uncomfortable situation. And also depending on the state of the roads, because we don't know what sort of roads they had in Macoupin County, Illinois. So the Newberry Library from Illinois actually has a whole biography of Emma Wormwood, and it gives you a timeline, which I think is really interesting. So she was born in 1872, then it kind of skips the period that we're reading about today, but it goes straight to 1910 when she was living in Girard McCoupin with her parents, John and Lena Wormwood, and she was working as a school teacher. And it notes that she was single. Then in 1918, she bought a house in Wood River. Then in 1920, she was still living in that house. She was still single and she was still working as a public school teacher. Now, 1921, so 1 year later, she returns to Wood River. So she was actually away for a year in Johnstown, PA. And then 1924, she took a trip with her two sisters, which I haven't heard about before, to California, and she was visiting relatives for 1 year. So she was living quite a leisurely life. And one of the things I'm wondering about is how come a public school teacher was able to just buy a house as a single woman. I think it's quite a feat. In 1930 to 1935, she was still living in Wood River, still single, still on the home, and no occupation was listed, so we might assume she retired at that time as she was well over 60, I think. And then in 1940, she was living with her sisters in East Wheatfield, PA. Is that Pennsylvania? PA. Yeah. Sorry, I'm not from there. Then in 1944, she led devotions at a WCTU meeting in Wood River. I mean, that's quite a long life, isn't it? Because she was born in like late 19th century, but early enough for her to finish the century as she was almost 30 years old. So she lived a good chunk of her life in 19th century. Then she lived through the First and the Second World War. And then in 1950, she was living in Long Beach, Los Angeles, California. So she moved around a lot. And then here is the interesting bit. She was listed obviously as single still, but she was living with another woman, which, you know, it could have been a roommate. It could have been that she shared a house with someone, but there is always a possibility that it was actually her partner. So I guess we'll never know. But the fact that she stayed single most of her life and was never married to a man and then lived with a woman is like hella suspicious. So we're gonna keep that in mind. Then a year after this note, she died in April 1951, still in California. So there was quite a lot going on. Again, quite a long life, because that's what? That's a year short of 80 years old. So for that era, I think it's quite a long life for a woman. So this is sort of all we know about Emma Wormwood. And I think it's, you know, it's good to have some sort of background to what was going on. But again, we're focusing on a time in her life where she was living with her parents, but also working at a school that I think she must have sort of lived nearby around the time that she was working at the school, because she was not commuting every day. So let's dive into some of her diary entries. September the 5th, 1896, Saturday. Mama and Papa went to town. Letter from Mr. Vogel saying school would begin Monday. Bird, Flossie and I went to Girard, then to Verdun, to band concert. Got physical geography for $1.45 and tablets for 59 cents. I think it's fascinating what people used to buy, because the products are so vastly different. Like, someone would straight up go to a shop to buy a piece of ribbon. But also going with your three best friends to another town to a band concert, some things truly never change. She was also like 24 at the time, so she was both young and at the same time grown up enough to obviously have her own independent life. Monday. School opened with 27 pupils. Not so favorably impressed as I had hoped. Nearly worn out with my walk. Over a mile to school. Over a mile is not that bad, is it? But I guess, you know, she was already exhausted just thinking about the pupils. I find the fact that she said not so favorably impressed as I had hoped so funny, because I feel like most of modern teachers can relate to that. Thursday. Stella cried all morning with her foot. Sent her home at noon with Miss Maud Walton. Clarence visited our school afternoon. Again, still happens nowadays. Someone's crying about their foot and you have to send them home. Saturday. Okay, this is interesting. How she spent her weekends. I ironed in morning. Afternoon went to town. Got slippers for $1.75. Stockings for 70 cents. Called on Ed and Fanny. So she saw some friends, did some shopping, ironed in the morning. Again, nothing new in the universe. The next day, Sunday, came back in the rain. No one at Mr. Duggar's. And then in the brackets, she says, joke about the dollar. There's a lot of times where she puts things in the brackets that are obviously some sort of inside jokes for her or quotes from other people. And I find it so interesting that she decided to, you know, note that down, even though she clearly focuses on the practicalities of everyday life and what she achieved during the day. Friday. Went home with Lula. Mr. David overtook us on our way home, decorated with zinnias. And then in the brackets, she says, look so old with an old maid's hat on. Race around the house. Another bracket, pillow fight. Another bracket, Ferris wheel. And then another bracket, stump speeches at schoolhouses. And the last one says, a man was showing the teacher how to teach school. I guess it was the superintendent. A lot of gibberish, it seems, but also I have a feeling it's writing down the funny moments of the day. So race around the house with an old maid's hat on is so cute. And then she had a pillow fight and then Ferris wheel, whatever that meant. I just find it so, so cute. Wednesday. Went to Mr. Leonard's. Next day, the girls all gave me birthday whippings and kisses. What? Birthday whippings. I do hope it's whipped cream. And then in the brackets she says, two big apples, ginger cookie. See, this is the thing I think we complicated a lot. I think we complicated birthdays and birthday parties. You do not need to have a full-on wedding-style venue, food, and... Oh, my boyfriend's calling. Dude, I'm recording a podcast right now. You do not need... gifts for friends that are coming over. You do not need everyone to dress up in a cosplay. You do not need decorations that are your monthly income. You do not need all that. All she needed to have a nice birthday was she got two big apples and a ginger cookie and then good wishes from other people. Literally, I think we should chill on birthdays. It's not even that deep. Actually, a lot of the things that they celebrated in the 19th century were just so much simpler. For example, Christmases. They did not really care about Christmases that much. They just had dinner and prayed. And basically, that's it. They had some traditions. They did some gifts. But it wasn't like this full-fledged, week-long celebration that you need to have a mental breakdown or to like fully prepare. Same with birthdays. Same with weddings, actually. They really did not care about weddings. They were just like, we got married and that's what counts. And I think a lot of the stuff just got overblown by our consumptionism and by, you know, all the commercials and social media that we see. We do not need that. Okay, sorry, I went on a long rant. It's not even about this text anymore. Wednesday. Mr. McClare surprised us by calling about 3 o'clock and remaining until school dismissed. Then she puts a quote in a bracket. I think it's a quote from him. Things are as I expected to find them. After visiting schools, such as many that I have gone to, it is a relief to visit a school like yours. Again, I'll say I am well pleased. I think she was well pleased as well. I think she sounds pretty proud of it. I mean, putting it down in your diary like that, word for word, I think she was pretty chuffed about this. Saturday, Papa and I went to Girard. Got new black dress. Okay, how much were dresses back then? So you remember the previous shopping that she did, which was like $1.50. She bought a dress for $7.13. So quite pricey compared to her other items. Sent money orders to girls and for journals. Postage 50 cents. At Dex, 35 cents for rubbers. I'm assuming rubbers for writing. Sunday, Mama and I went to meeting at Everly. Next day, made black dress skirt. Okay, what I find interesting is that she just got a black dress the previous day. So she either just got the bodice and then made the skirt the next day, or she means readjusting the dress so it fits to her measurements, which is also possible because if she didn't commission a dress and she bought a ready-made one, she would have to alter it to her measurements. So in that same diary entry, she actually reminisces what she has been doing during the week, which I'm assuming she didn't write down. Tuesday, went to Posts, paid Kitz Miller 75 cents. At night, went to musical at the American. Wednesday, went to Stones, visited Sugar Creek School. Stayed all night. After supper, Betty, Leela, Casper, John, Lester and I went to Adele's. Recitations and music. Thursday, Jeff took me home as he went to Palmyra. About 10:30, Bird and I started to Verdun, to Alderson's for dinner. With Mary Alford, told about Aunt Susan's death. At Star Store, $3 for a picture. This is like straight after. So she's like, yeah, Aunt Susan died. Also, I bought a picture for $3. This is an interesting overview of what they did during the week. So obviously she is talking about either the activities that she did after work, or maybe she did not work at that particular time, but she did spend a lot of time with her friends. She did see a musical at the American, which I'm assuming was some sort of music show. She visited another school, as she mentions, spent her time with her friends doing recitations and music, which is a very 19th century way of spending your free time. And then, you know, she had dinner with people. So again, there was a lot of socializing in 19th century. If you were an introvert, good freaking luck, because you were screwed. Friday, sewed all day. Next day, went to Harvey's. Folks went to funeral. Candy oranges, nuts, and big yellow apples. Again, it always gets me when people in the past used to describe things that are completely normal for us, so food that we have every day, as sort of delicacy and a rarity. I mean, candy oranges, nuts, and big yellow apples. That was as refined of a sweet as she could get in that era. For letter from Ida, Sunday, came back to school. Okay, so she was on her time off. Thursday, Belle visited school and I went home with her. Watch party. Wait, what's a watch party? Like, in the times when Netflix was not a thing, what did I watch? Had good time. Authors, anagrams, floor games, refreshments. Rest while others redeemed pawns. Pickles, orphans, pencil sharpener, return of handkerchief. All of these are completely lost to me. Like, I just don't know what exactly they did, but it seems like they played a lot of word games, like anagrams. They probably had some board games as well, and that was enough entertainment for people. Again, parties used to be so simple. You would just have pen and paper and you'd be like, can you come up with a word starting with a T? Friday, tired, rainy, Will Hollingsworth and Ralph Smith visited school. There is a lot of really relatable entries, like the short entries like that, where she's just like, I'm so done. Thursday, so muddy, decided to not go to church. Roy wanted us to go to the party. Went and had nice time. Crowd was small. And then in the brackets, fine day, double swing. So it was too muddy to go to a church, but not muddy enough to prevent her from going to a party. This is very interesting. I don't think her pastor would like that very much. Saturday. Bertha and I went to town with Mr. Vogel. Roads awful. See, this is what I was talking about with quality of the roads. Because roads were obviously not covered with concrete at the time, and neither were they cobblestoned most of the times in areas like this, it really depended on the weather you had the week prior to your planned journey, whether or not you're gonna get somewhere in a short period of time, or whether it's gonna turn into a horrible, you know, hours-long escapade, because If the roads were bad, if the roads were muddy, the wheels of your carriage would be sinking into the mud, which would make it more difficult for the horse to move, and everything becomes just much slower. So it's a mess. But then she says in the brackets, got red waists and had pictures taken, cashed order. The red waists that she's talking about were basically just early versions of female shirts. So before 1890s, you would mostly have just gowns. So you would have a piece of the gown that would make up the bodice, and then you would have the skirts. But both those things would be matching. It would be made of the same fabric, or at least it would have inserts of the same fabric. Around 1880s, 1890s, the idea of a shirt waist came in, where you would have a shirt made of a different fabric than the skirt, and it was sort of like becoming a working class outfit. So they got red waists, which means most likely a shirt that would be worn with, let's say, a black skirt or whatever they wanted. But it was the first time basically in a long time when fashion was like, hey, how about we do separates for women? How about we separate the skirt from the top of the gown? Sunday went home on horseback, right there. I wonder, because we don't actually know where she got home from, because she only says she went to town the day before. But then she went back on horseback, which again was about, when I look at the distance of those towns, it's like 10, 11 miles at least. So that's quite a ride. Friday, began work about 10 o'clock. At noon, company began to come. About 25, what? Albin Arnold brought graphophone. Graphophone was an improved version of a phonograph. So it basically was like an early version of a gramophone. So it played, I wouldn't say music, but it played some sounds. It was mostly used for dictation. So you would just say things to it. Children spoke pieces, so I'm assuming they played around with the graphophone. How freaking excited must the children have been in rural Illinois in 1896 or so, experiencing this sort of technology for the first time? I would personally shit myself. And then that guy not only brought a graphophone around, he also treated children to candy and oranges, had jolly good time, and parted with goodwill toward all, even to my two beloved directors. But it seemed that this sort of fun had its consequences, because then she writes, after went home, my head ached dreadfully, packed trunk and telescope. Sunday, Dolly and Nellie gave me their pictures. We need to bring this back. Why are our friends not giving us their pictures? We need to bring this so back. Frame your friends, show them around. I mean, April 19th. Borrowed Ed's books on physics, studied quite a good deal all week, and made black waste. On Thursday, Papa went after more oats. Dinner after 2 o'clock. Rhubarb pudding. That sounds delicious, not gonna lie. Saturday, purchased Black Sailor. Now, I've been on a search to find out what a Black Sailor was, but all it shows up is obviously Black Sailors. So there is not really a way for me to find that out. However, if you do know what that is, maybe it's an American thing, do let me know. Papa brought fruit and gasoline. Again, imagine living in a world where someone buying fruit is an event that is worthy to write down in a diary. I was over to look at Melly's hats. We washed yesterday and dried the clothes and ironed today. Mrs. Farthing here Sunday. Again, I feel like we've complicated things. I mean, obviously we do have washing machines now, which is a huge, huge help in housework. And yet, it still feels a lot more overwhelming than the way those people approached cleanliness and washing. And they, you know, they gathered together, probably Emma, her sisters, and her mother. They did the washing together. They treated it as a sort of social experience as well, because they got to spend time together. It was happening only every now and then, so you wouldn't be obsessed about getting your washing done daily. You would probably do it once, I don't know, a week or two. I actually don't know what the frequency was. You didn't have to wash your outer clothes because you wore your, you know, multiple layers of underwear just so it doesn't get dirty. And why does it seem more simple than what we are stuck doing on repeat every day? I mean, it made our lives so much easier, but at the same time, it only sped things up. And now we're constantly feeling like we don't have enough time, which is crazy because we should have much more time by simplifying those menial tasks. And then we have one of my favorite entries of all time. Sunday. Slept nearly all day. I mean, as always, people never change. A 24-year-old girl in 1890s was just as keen on spending a Sunday sleeping as we are nowadays. And then another cool entry, Wednesday, planted verbenas and radishes. Not at all well. We love a self-aware queen. Thursday, washed four windows, two doors, and cleaned front porch. Afternoon, covered mama's rocking chair. Wrote to K-A-R. Okay, there is someone mysterious written about here. Friday, mailed letters to K-R and Mary D. Called at Fanny's. Letter from Belle, walnut candy. Called on grandma's, but she was away. Stopped at Mrs. Kidwell's and Mrs. Farthing's. Borrowed book of poems. Much colder, covered garden truck. Saturday. Washed dishes, gave front part of house general sweep and dust. That's probably all she did that day. Why are we so obsessed with productivity? She literally washed the dishes, swept the front part of the house. And dusted it. Why are we setting all these expectations? I mean, I'm literally, this is so eye-opening for me. Every time I read a diary from the past, I'm like, they didn't do shit. And that was completely fine. Obviously, people worked hard. And, you know, the physical workers, everyone worked hard. But at the same time, you're reading diaries like Samuel Pepys, who's like, went to work at 12, drank a beer, sat in an office for an hour, went back home. I feel like that obsession with productivity is slowly killing us from the inside. Let's give ourselves grace to spend a Saturday washing the dishes and sweeping one part of the house. It's not even the whole house, one part of the house. And then Sunday, did not wear shoes all day. She's so funny. May 24th, made percale shirtwaist. What's astonishing to me, I mean, I'm assuming she did possess a sewing machine, but the absolute speed in which she whips out clothing is insane. She made a shirtwaist in one day, in a single day. A Victorian shirtwaist, right? So it has to be fitted really well. And she probably didn't have a lot of patterns to work with. That's crazy. That's a crazy speed. And that's not even her job. She's not trained to be a seamstress. She's just some random school teacher that possessed that skill. I feel like they were much more skilled in actual useful things that improved your life. Thursday. Studied all my eyes would let me, as I have done every day. Over to post a few minutes. Alfred 15 today. Sunday. To church. To Dunkard. Afternoon. Met the Mrs. Showalter. The preacher's evening sermon, woman, her influence and responsibility. And then in brackets, she quotes, beauty is only skin deep. I'd skin her. What? Friday, more soldiers passed through town. In the brackets, she says, donuts. Did not stop. I love this. More soldiers passed through town. Donuts. She sounds like a millennial. This is basically what we're ending this with, just donuts. And then did not stop. I feel like we could be good friends. She seems like she had her life sort of figured out. She does not complain about anything. She's honest about not feeling great. She loves shopping. She loves fashion and she loves new hats and new clothes. She likes spending time with her friends. She's not a crazy party girl because she didn't really have a chance to be that person probably, but also maybe she doesn't want to. She travels a lot. She is exhausted because of the kids that she has to be dealing with. And on top of that all, I don't know. She's just genuine. She seems like a genuine person. Obviously, it's her diary that she was probably not expecting me to read 130 years on, which, again, is sometimes so insane to me that we never know where our possessions and our belongings and things about us will end up 100 years from now, 200 years from now. Probably nowhere. But those that do survive, can you imagine someone reading my diary 100 years from now? Because I would actually probably haunt them. Like, please don't touch that. This is not for you. But also, obviously, I would want them to know what my life looked like. But I feel like even in diaries nowadays, we feel so pressured to write the cool things. When we're journaling, it has to be aesthetic, even though we're the only ones seeing it. Why does everything need to be perfect now? It's kind of exhausting, not gonna lie. And you know, she lived a pretty simple life, but she never aspired to anything else. I think that's one more curse of modernity. Always having at the back of your head the thought that maybe you could do better. Maybe you could have a better job. Maybe you could live in a country that is better off. Maybe you could have a better partner. We're always trying to improve, and it's exhausting. It's exhausting to not be able to live in the moment and enjoy the birds and the muddy roads and the bare feet and sweeping the porch. I feel like there's a lot to learn in reading people's from the past thoughts. I don't know why this enraged me so much. Maybe I'm just hormonal, but I get this feeling a lot when I'm reading old diaries, because just the speed at which life was going forward was much healthier, I think. So let me know what you think. Maybe you just find the whole thing very boring. Maybe this will actually slowly kill you. The thought that the only thing you have set for a Saturday is washing the dishes. But I feel like lifestyle-wise, they had some things figured out much better than we do. And obviously some of it, a lot of it has to do with the world that we live in. A lot of it has to do with the system that was set up against us. But I think there are ways and there are things that we can do to get back to that simple way of living that will stress us out much less, I suppose. So let me know if you're planning apples as gifts for your birthday party this year. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Don't forget to check out patreon.com/textree for some cool stuff, and I'll hear you again in another episode. Bye!